You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 6 June, we've got U.S. unemployment at 2:30 this afternoon. Expected is no change, 4.2%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. I want to touch on Renogen. It was one of their 2025 stock picks. Fortune favors the bold. Are they taking profits on the ASP Isotope deal, going with the deal? We'll get some insights from Kieran. Anthony Clark, I want to touch Brazilian avian flu. Any benefit to local producers? NAMPAC and CMH. Thoughts from me and Mark. Sell off, learning to not panic and rather be a buyer. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Musk-Trump feud explodes into bursts of threats and recriminations. Tech billionaire floats idea of creating a new political party. Business Day, Steenhuisen announces first mass vaccination of SA poultry. Department also orders 900,000 foot and mouth disease vaccines for KZ. In morning markets, the U.S. was red. Red. S&P down 0.5%. Nasdaq down 0.8%. The East is mixed. Sydney almost 0.1% higher. Tokyo up 0.4%. Hong Kong down 0.33%. Also down 0.33%. Commodities mostly green. The exception is gold futures 3,386. Brent 65.13. Platinum 1,155. That is a 3-year high. Palladium 1,022. The rand is 17.76. Bitcoin 102,300. Top 40 opening call. Red open expected. 175 points or 0.2% lower.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the early morning. At Renogen, we've got the deal from ASP Isotopes on the table. That's an all-share deal, 0.09 of the ASP shares for each Renogen. Renogen was a stock pick for Anchor. And to be clear, it was fortune favors the bold. It's going really well so far in terms of just pure share price. Renogen closed at 12 Rand yesterday. What's your view on Renogen and the potential deal with ASP Isotopes?
Good morning, Simon. Good to be on the show. And yeah, like you say, it was one of our stock picks going into this year. A very controversial one at that.
Yeah.
It's not turned out how we've envisaged, but obviously in hindsight, looking like a good call. And from our point of view, that's all that matters at this point. And yeah, there are still some slight hurdles to come, though. Just yesterday, we were having a chat in house and about what still has to happen. And the takeover regulation panel wants two votes that still need to pass. Renogen wanted to combine it into one. Mm. We do think it's a bit of unnecessary red tape, to be honest. But the first vote is regarding the shareholder approval for the $30 million loan from ASP to Renogen. $10 million of that has already been received by Renogen. And then the second vote is the scheme of arrangement to ratify the share offer that you mentioned. And both of these votes do have to pass for the deal to actually go through. The first of the votes will happen quite soon in this month. And there is a small risk, you know, that something does not go according to plan yet. But we do obviously urge Renogen shareholders to accept this offer. Otherwise, the outlook will be very bleak and Renogen could go into business rescue. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
And I just think for some context this year, obviously the main concern after Renogen was able to produce helium was the funding risk that evolved. And if this deal does go through, that risk has essentially been eradicated. This has, however, come at the expense of the upside in Renogen shares, now largely being capped. And I know, like, we are one of the very optimistic ones in the market, but we are there's certain people in our business who are a bit annoyed by the upside being capped. And the economics for Renogen shareholders going forward will be 17% exposure to Renogen and 83% exposure to ASP. And then, I mean, onto ASP, we are very positive on the story. And we were actually adding two portfolios before the news of the Renogen takeover. So there is obviously still very large execution risk sure. for the company like ASP, but we are very excited by ASP actually, just as a standalone story.
Okay, because of course ASP will list on the JSE, so it will be a stock that investors can buy if they so wish. Assuming the deal goes ahead, it'll then also include the Renogen stake. I take your point. I'm in that cap. I am upset that my upside is now essentially capped. I know there was risk with Renogen, but the deals kind of said there's a ceiling to the price. But the short answer is, you're saying to folks, if you're a Renogen shareholder, take the deal and get the ASP Isotope shares.
Yes, exactly, Simon. I mean, they could have, like I said, gone into business rescue, or there could have been a worse or an outcome where shareholders could have got diluted. We've seen quite a number of these cases on the JSE at the moment. Yeah. And then I think, you know, we obviously have been keeping an eye on the nuclear trend for a while, as I think you would know. And there's not many high-tech companies on the JSE, and we welcome them in all of their forms. And we are very excited about this one. And we do hope the regulators just don't make it too hard for new technology to thrive in South Africa. It will be very good for our stock market, and it will mobilize that part of our supply chain. And the supply chains really should be largely integrated between Renogen and ASP. And this deal is going to provide some much needed skills for Renogen. And I mean, we still sit in the camp that this helium deposit that Renogen has is the only one like it in the world. And if it does come right, Renogen simply will be the lowest cost helium producer in the world by quite a long way.
Yeah. Which is why I quite liked Renogen, but I take your point of that. A quick change of track. Discovery stock at all-time highs. I got to say, I like the business philosophy. I found the accounting statements some of the hardest things to wrap my head around. Insights into it, is it a stock that you folks like? Is it one that you follow, or perhaps it's kind of, I don't know, not really on your radar?
Yeah, Simon. So we do have a slight overweight in Discovery. So it is one that we like, but it has run hard like a lot of the other insurers have recently. But we do think there's still value in it, but not looking to upweight it quite at the moment. And ultimately, it fits our criteria of a local company that's able to grow its earnings strongly despite operating in a very low growth environment. And I think the Discovery story at the moment has hinged around their heavy investments over the last 10 years in things like Discovery Bank and Vitality, looking to bear fruits now. They obviously started ramping up spending big time on the bank in 2020. And a lot of these new initiatives of Discovery's have started to move along their J curves. And they're also starting to decrease spending as an overall percentage of their operating profit. And this is where we expect earnings to continue to ramp up. And we're expecting earnings growth of around 15% per year. But like you said, Simon, there could be, we don't really know what risks do exist in their treatment in the insurance business. And the accounting is complicated. That is certainly an acknowledgement. So, but besides that, I think we are happy to keep holding on to Discovery. And we're pretty happy with how it continues to execute at the moment.
Yeah, and I like your point there. They're at that point where they're now spending less on those businesses, and those businesses are actually paying back, banking being one of them, and that ahead of target. Mm-hmm. We'll leave it there. Kieran Whitten, Anchor, always appreciate your early morning insights. The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Anthony Clark. You find him at Small Talk Daily on the Twitters. Anthony, appreciate the time. Brazilian avian flu, the outbreak from a couple of weeks ago, banning now, I imagine, imports into South Africa. Does this create opportunity for our chicken producers, most notably perhaps Astral, who's kind of king of the pile there? Or is this maybe not really going to be of much assistance?
Yeah, good morning, Simon. This is a very interesting story. I think I've been tracking this for the last couple of years. As we all know, avian influenza was a terrible problem in this country in 2023, causing billions of rands worth of damage to the industry. Mm. In the Brazilian case, there have been cases of backyard flocks with avian influenza. But literally a couple of weeks ago, we saw for the first time one of the large producing southern states actually disclosed they had avian influenza. And as such, many countries around the world, including China, Japan, Mexico, amongst others, and South Africa, banned the importation of poultry from Brazil for obvious reasons because of the potential for contamination and infection. Now, why that's important for this country is that avian influenza is currently a scourge globally. The American market is basically closed off because 37 states there have got avian influenza. The European market is closed off, rampant AI. We now have Brazil, which is the largest producer and exporter of poultry in the world, and they have an 80% share plus of all the imports coming into this country on any monthly basis. So basically what it does is it chokes off, sadly, as I wrote in a note a couple of weeks ago, the very product that the poorest of the poor tends to eat, which is mechanically deboned meats and what I would call offal and carcasses, which is chicken heads, feet, gizzards, etc., etc., which we as a country do not have the volumes to meet domestic demand. Now, interestingly, there's a two-way argument here. You've seen in the newspapers the South African Poultry Association saying, listen, we can actually increase production. There will be no shortage of chicken in the domestic marketplace. But yesterday, the Association of Meat Importers and Exporters, in a very valid argument on page 2 of the Business Day, saying, well, the product that we actually import, mechanically deboned meat, that goes into processed meats, polony, Viennas, we do not produce in this country, and we probably never will in scale. And as such, prices will rise for those products, which is probably true. But as it stands right now, most imports are banned from Brazil, apart from heat-treated MDM, although the Brazilian government is looking to lift those restrictions in the next month or two as they get the disease under control. But it might take slightly longer to convince global economies to let Brazilian chicken back in. But as it stands right now, prices have been ticking higher, as they traditionally do, but there's enough demand in the country to meet supply, but not in the key categories of offal and MDM.
So it's actually the nuance as to which parts of the chicken which actually matters and is the detail that is the sticky part.
Correct. In Astral's case, the stock has been ticking up very nicely over the last couple of months, as has Rainbow Chickens, as the combination of reasons. One, the main input cost into chicken is soya and maize. They have fallen between 28 and 24% year to date. That'll have a significant benefit to the margin impact to poultry companies in the second half and into 2026. Secondly, prices are ticking back up. I have a weekly chart which I publish for my clients, which shows chicken realization prices per kilogram. And they basically peaked in mid-2023. They completely crashed into 2024 as load shedding became endemic and the cost of processing rose. And they've only now just got back to the prices they were in 2023. On a realistic basis, chicken prices locally need to rise further to compensate for the higher costs of processing. Electricity has gone up. Water's gone up. Wages has gone up. And these have to be recouped. So even though input costs have come down, I foresee that the chicken prices will probably have to rise by another between 150 and 250 a kilo just to recoup latent costs in the system. And sadly, that has to be borne by somebody. You know, food companies are not a charity.
Yeah, I hear you. It is a case of the costs are up. I mean, that's just a stark reality, and somebody has to pay for those costs. Let's move on to Nampak. This is a stock I know you follow. I think it was one of your picks for the year, in fact, for 2025. And they are having a turnaround. Turnarounds often take long and don't quite work, but here we actually have a turnaround that's working.
Absolutely. In 2023, I had Nampak as my wild card of the year. And people thought I was smoking Cape Town crack when I selected that stock at 201 Rand and 18 cents. I think the last time I checked, it was trading at about 510, which is not a bad lick in the last couple of years. I selected the stock again at the beginning of this year. I'm checking my prices right now. It was actually at 406 Rand 54. And year to date, it is up roughly 25%. Now, results that came out for the end of March came out a good couple of weeks ago. I hosted a lunch for Phil Roux and his management team in Cape Town a week last Monday. And I can tell you that luncheon was a stellar little function. Phil Roux was on the top of his game. And as I remarked to my clients, in a clerkism tongue-in-cheek, listening to Phil Roux and Andrew Hood at that luncheon, who's the chief operating officer who will take over from Phil in due course, you would have left that meeting, run out, sold your granny's kidneys to buy some Nampak. And if you did, you'd be up 15%.
Yeah, it's been an astounding story. As I said, lots of turnarounds. They nearly always tell me, we're seeing Pick and Pay, that turnaround's been pushed back by a year already, and we're only 1 year in. A last stock I quickly want to touch on is CMH, Combined Motor Holdings. We're actually seeing some traction with new vehicle sales. We had out earlier this week good numbers, and reportedly about 12 Chinese companies didn't even report their data, so probably a bit better. And CMH, well-positioned. They've got some big brands, but they've also got a really good little car hire, and of course, Suzuki, which is now number two in South Africa.
Yes, as you correctly say, Suzuki is the main franchise that belongs to CMH, and it's usurped Volkswagen for the last few months to become the second best-selling car in the country. And we all know that consumers want affordability, they want value for money in a new vehicle, and many of the Chinese brands and the Indian-made brands actually offer that affordability and functionality that consumers want. In CMH's case, they're having a good lick regarding Suzuki. They also have some of the Chinese brands as well, alongside some of the more traditional brands like Ford and Nissan, who are not doing as well. The market leader remains Toyota. But as you correctly say, CMH year to date is up about 4%. It pays a nice fat dividend, even though the earnings were down for the year ended February. But it should recover in the next 6 to 12 months. One in a combination of substantially higher new car sales. Mm-hmm. We saw the NAMSA stats that came out a week or two ago, albeit from a very low base of May 2024 during the GNU elections. And then moving into the second half of the year, the tourist season, their first car rental has had a very good run in the last few years. A bit of a price war at Christmas last year among some of the larger competitors, but that seems to have calmed down. So a combination of a good fat cash pile, roughly 45% of a company's market cap is in cold, hard cash. 954 million rand. Jeb McIntosh is 80 years old, been running that company for over 50 years. Succession planning has to take place at some point in time. I've speculated perhaps some form of corporate transaction may happen in the next 12 months on this transition from family ownership to perhaps another ownership. And of course, we've got new car sales up and the tourist season ahead of us. CMH at about 33 rand to me remains the pick of the bunch in the motor retailing sector.
Yeah, I've held it for a while. The share price is slow, but the dividend sure makes up for it. And I think they're well positioned. Leave it there. Anthony Clark, Small Talk Daily on the Twitters. Appreciate the time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Talking Nampak, it has been a spectacular recovery there. Are you holding this turnaround story? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Give your money the return at once without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Some thoughts from me on stock market sell-offs. There was a debate happening on the Twitters the last few days around how buying at the lows in April would have created generational wealth. I'm not convinced with that. But essentially, we did have a sell-off. Liberation Day, U.S. markets were down some 15%. Lots of panic was abounding until Trump changed his mind and said a 90-day pause. The point is always not to panic. And I think we know this. I think listeners here are absolutely get it. But in essence, there are a few options that we have when markets sell off. The one is to do nothing. And that absolutely is a good response. Don't be selling. Just sit there and let markets sell. The other is to panic and to try and get out. And your problem there is that you're getting out. That's fine. But now you're out. You've probably got tax events happening, certainly transaction costs. And you've got to get back in, and you're probably getting back in at higher prices, or you're sitting on the sidelines. In other words, you've been shaken out of the market. Third option, of course, is to be buying in those sort of scenarios. That's hard. That requires some courage. And the key point is to ride them out. You need to have that ability to say, yep, you know what, things are selling, but we're long term. And we said at the time, back in April, you know, Trump's going to be here for another 4 years. Our portfolios, our long-term portfolios, are really looking, what, 5, 10, multi-decades a year. They have got a way longer timeline than Trump's presidency. That's it for today with Chatting with Chantal Marks. Yesterday, spa results. More write-downs, HEPS and revenue both a little lower. We asked if there was value in this food retailer. Over half of you said no, staying away. 40-odd percent said, you know, they just can't beat ShopRite. That's just the bottom line story. The rest was saying, yeah, some great opportunity here. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app. 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobuchle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday. Local REITs still strong.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.